She would put me on the floor of her kitchen in Hartford, Connecticut, and sort of open up the dishwasher door. And while she was banging her pots, I would bang mine.
My mom decided that my sister and I would not learn to cook or do any other household chores because she wanted us to become doctors.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Laura Wexler.
And I'm Jessica Hinken.
And this week on the podcast, Mom Spaghetti, with apologies to Mr. Eminem.
Mr.
Marshall Mathers. We've got two stories about women who learned to cook in their 20s as a way to connect with their childhood.
Yeah, so it's like women who didn't grow up identifying as cooks and who didn't necessarily want to be with their moms in the kitchen. But
being with your mom in the kitchen, depending on your mom, could be great or harrowing.
I don't remember if my mom went into a kitchen. I don't know if she knew.
So you might have had to put her into the kitchen.
I don't know if we had
there.
A kitchen in the house.
All I know is my mother's was such a bad cook and still is. And now, actually, I try to cook a lot and give it to her so she doesn't have to. But
Trudy.
She would do almost anything not to have to cook, including buying 20 hamburgers when they were on sale for 29 cents.
At McDonald's
and putting them in the freezer and then just having us microwave them. And I'm just going to tell you, the shelf life, it's long. They must be one or two preservatives in those. Anyway, let's take a listen to Mary Rose Madden.
So as Jessica said, I'm from a big family. I'm the youngest of four. And I think that my mom was sort of counting on me to be an extra set of hands around the kitchen. But it wasn't meant to be. She would put me on the floor of her kitchen in Hartford, Connecticut, and sort of open up the dishwasher door, saddle me up there with a bunch of Tupperware and wooden spoons, and while she was banging her pots, I would bang mine. And this is how it would be for a very long time. I just had no interest in really taking an interest in actually cooking. So this is really it for about 20 years. So eventually, I was in college, and I would get these calls from my mother, and she would these voicemails from my mom, asking me how I was doing and how I was eating and how things were going. But they weren't just the general mom calls. She wanted specifics. She wanted to know exactly what I was eating. And she would beg me to call her back and tell her exactly, word for ingredient by ingredient, what I ate. And unfortunately, this is what I would call her back and tell her. Macaroni and cheese with mustard and pretzels. Pretzels with cream cheese, pretzels with salsa, pretzels with beer, pretzels with salsa, pretzels with pretzels. And so I could just hear it over the phone. She ached. Her heart was breaking. She was, you know, her family was from Italy. She really wanted me to eat much better than this. But this was how things were. So fast forward a few more years. Now I've graduated college and I'm working at the old Louis Bookstore Cafe. And it was a fine bookstore and cafe. And I started volunteering at a hospice. I thought I wanted to go into social work. So I started picking up some gigs, I guess they're called, I don't know. So I would go, I would visit some people. I would mostly read like cards or books. So we would flip through the newspaper together or go through old photo albums. It was lovely. It was really, really nice. And this one job called me up, and this man wanted me to come to his house, and this was different. So I show up at his house, and he greets me and tells me that I won't be meeting his wife, who actually needs the hospice care. I will be in the house, and she will be on the top level of the house, but we'll never meet. She is in the last stages of emphysema, and she is she's severely depressed. She'll stay up there, she'll read the New York Times, she'll do the crossword puzzles, and here's the bathroom, here's the kitchen, and here are oxygen tanks. In case she stops breathing, you can change these. I know, and I'm just like, no, I don't know, you know. And so he's just like, you'll be fine. She won't need an oxygen tank change. You'll be fine. And leaves me there. And so I'm standing there, and my head is spinning, and I don't know what to do. So I call my mom. I call my mom, like, Mom, what am I going to do here? How do I take care, you know, what do I do? So she's like, okay, here's what we're going to do. Walk over to the refrigerator. Open the freezer. What do you see? And what kind of meat? What do they have in their freezer? So I'm like rummaging through their freezer. I'm like, I don't know, you know. And she's like, okay, they have some sausage. Take out the sausage. Open up the refrigerator. Take out the red peppers, the green peppers, the onions, the garlic. And over the phone, 400 miles away, she teaches me how to make her sausage and peppers. So I'm in there, I'm like, you know, cooking. And I don't really hear a lot upstairs, just some movement. So I know she's, you know, I know she's alive. And that's it. So I'm cooking, cooking. So finally, hours later, the husband comes home. He seems happy. He seems satisfied. You know, it's. I think he walked into a house that smelled kind of like life. You know, it didn't smell so like someone was dying. It smelled like someone was actually living here now, and things were good. But he's very happy. He's telling me he wants me to come back and make more food. So I do. So I go home and I call my mom. I get all kinds of recipes. I go to the grocery store. I come back, and over the next few weeks, we cook over the phone. So. That's it for a little while. Now, a few years later, I get a phone call. My mom has suffered a terrible quadruple bypass surgery gone wrong. She's not doing well. So I leave Baltimore and move home, and she's in a wheelchair now. She's not doing physically, not doing good at all. So I move home. There's my sisters, my brother, my dad, and you know, they all live very close. But I'm living with my mom and my dad, and you know, the situation is absurd. It feels very strange. And everyone is also starting to get kind of depressed. And so my mom and I are here. We find ourselves in the kitchen again. And we're hungry, you know. She's like, we need to eat. So she takes it upon herself to get out her little box of recipes that have all of the recipes, her sisters, her mother, her aunts, everyone is passed down through generations, and starts picking through these index cards. And sooner or later, we start cooking linguine with clam sauce, her meatballs, her marinara sauce, and her amazing chicken cutlets. And so we just start going through the list. And then she starts looking at, you know, the Food Network and getting all these fancy ideas, and sends me out to the grocery store. I come back. Chop, 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 clean, clean, cook, 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 all day long. And, you know, pretty soon this is it. I mean, this is normal now. I mean, she's still in a wheelchair and we're cooking, but she is taking care of us in the way that she knows how to take care of us. So it's really great. So now here I am, 33, working at YPR, and at least once a day, I heat up some food, I'll make something to eat, and my coworker Suni says, if you know Suni, this is exactly almost what he says. He says, girlfriend, did Mama Carbone teach you how to cook like this? And I was like, no, Suni, this is, my mom taught me how to cook, but it's not really about the food. This is just, she just kind of had a way in the kitchen. She just had a really fun, happy, easy way in the kitchen. So now I'm here, and I love to cook for my son, my husband, and anyone I love. And the thing is so the other night, you know, I cook my 7-month-old, I cook him red lentils, brown rice, steamed apples. I mean, he's eating like a king, so he's very happy. But I think that at the end, she's kind of like, every day, every time I step into the kitchen, she's kind of teaching me how to be a mom.
Oh, Mary Rose. So Mary Rose is a local reporter and podcast editor, and she worked for WYPR for a long time. And this is such a sweet story that she told many years ago. Mm-hmm. How many years ago was that?
A lot. Before the internet.
Before the internet. And you can tell her voice is so young. It's mm-hmm. really sweet. Anyway, okay. Let's take a short break before our next story. So this next storyteller, Sylvie, shared a story at the Maryland Folk Festival, which the Stoop was grateful to be invited to this past summer and the summer before. And it's a tale about her mom basically not wanting her to be in the kitchen with her when she was younger, wanting different things for her daughters, but Sylvie finding her way to the kitchen nonetheless. Take a listen.
So I love cooking, the chopping, the dicing, the mincing, and not just things that involve a knife, the looking up of recipes, the sharing of foods. But it's ironic that when I looked this up and I decided to choose cooking as the story to share today, because I didn't learn to cook till my mid-20s, which is half of my life since I just turned 47. Because when I was a child, my mom decided that my sister and I would not learn to cook or do any other household chores because she wanted us to become doctors when we grew up. Her method was only 50% successful. My sister is a very accomplished MD. I work for the IRS. But I still have very fond memories of my childhood kitchen. My parents cooked, we helped, and the memories of that kitchen and certain foods, they're all attached to events and even days. There are certain foods like parantas, which are similar to pupusas, two tortillas stuffed with spiced potatoes most often, or cottage cheese, and we would eat them on weekends. It would be weekend mornings slathered with hot butter, and we would eat them with raita and pickles, or butter chicken, shahi, paneer. These are things you've probably seen on menus, but these were things that were saved for weddings, right? But then there were everyday staples like white rice. We would have them every night for dinner with lentils or vegetables, and I hated it. I still hate white rice. And I begged my mom for like leftover naan or tortillas to have. And I've tried to rack my brain for something American, but you know what? Even grilled cheese now has restaurants, so I can't think of, maybe PB&J. And my husband said he would even order that at a restaurant, and so I can't think of anything that's equivalent. But even, so let me think of something else that I hated like white rice, milk. Because my dad would give us a huge, or what I remember as huge, because to a child it was probably huge, cup of warmed milk every morning before school, 7 a.m. And I think it was because I remember the nuns that would be waiting for me at school, and that's maybe the connection I had. But I love milk in my tea. And if you know, tea, it's sacred for Indians. It's something the British left for us, I think. And tea time is sacred, and it still is for my parents. So when I drink tea now, it reminds me of tea time in the evenings. We would all sit together, we would play either card games or board games, and we'd have spicy snacks with it. My husband doesn't understand that connection. You eat a spicy snack, and then you drink hot tea. It's just delicious. It makes that spiciness even worse in your mouth, but it's just something from my childhood that's a special, and it just reminds me of those days. It also reminds me of a story. My dad would send me out once I was old enough to be able to ride a scooter or a car by myself, and he would send me out at 15. And my mom would get upset because she'd be like, "You're sending this young girl out in the evening. She's going to get heckled by boys." And my dad would say in Punjabi, "It doesn't matter. She'll bury them 6 feet under." It's a literal translation. And if you know, everyone outside of America has the metric system. But we still use 6 feet under. So I guess for burying bodies, that transcends all cultures. Now, something else that my dad, if back in those days, 1980s, that was different for him to send his daughter out to do errands alone. He also cooked, which was different for men of his generation. And he would cook those special chicken dishes every now and then. But what he would bring home would be these unplucked chickens. And I can still see them in my mind, right? This whole chicken unplucked, and my mom would refuse to go near it. And me being the older daughter would be there helping him cut it. But he would also require two helpers in the kitchen, all the dishes, and even now when he cooks in my kitchen, my sink is full of 10 dishes and everything else. But it reminds me of that childhood kitchen, so I like it when he cooks. But he cooks those when he comes to our house once a year. And so we eat that shahi chicken or paneer when he comes or when we go out to a restaurant. But those everyday dishes like dal makhani or lentils, when we are at home. So if my husband tries to order them at a restaurant, I usually say over my dead body. Because I can cook them in my sleep. Because at some point, I did learn to cook, like I said, in my mid-20s. I was a poor graduate student, living alone, dating a not-so-rich young man, who I found out was dining at this Mexican restaurant 3 times a week. So I offered to cook. And the first meal I researched and cooked was beef burritos. I think they were good. This was in 2003. We're still together. We have a 14-year-old son. Second thing I cooked was kheer, K-H-E-E-R, rice pudding. And I remember his sister telling me that she loved it so much she had it for breakfast the next day. I think I realized then that food had a way of showing love and bringing people together. I had left home, India, at 18 and come to North America to go to school. And I hadn't lived with my parents ever since then. So almost a decade after that, I called my mom up to ask for recipes from home and talk to her about, well, how much of what do I add to this recipe or that recipe? And also learned that a tablespoon to her was different from what tablespoon means here. And a cup of this was not what a cup means here. So now I had to record recipes from her, what she had learned from her mother, and translate that to what it means here and kind of write them down in my language. But it did bring us together. And so now when I cook and share these things with my coworkers, with my neighbors, with my in-laws, and with the extended family, I'm sharing parts of my childhood that I thought I'd left behind. But now I'm bringing it all back. So 9 years ago, we built our house. And I got to design my house around my kitchen. And that kitchen was designed around my stove. Literally, I bought the stove before we built our design for the house. And so now when I cook, almost everything starts with garlic and ginger on that stove. And when that smell rises, it reminds me of that childhood that I thought I'd left behind in 1997. And I start cooking and all those memories come rushing back. And I hope that as I'm cooking that and my son's running around, rolling his eyes at me as I'm telling him stories or trying to tell him these stories. And I'm hoping that at some point in the future, he'll be telling these stories at a stoop of his own. Thank you.
I love that story. And I love, as I was listening to it, as she was telling it, I got so hungry.
Well, I just want to let you know that I gifted my 14-year-old son an air fryer for Christmas.
Oh.
So.
We got one too.
Oh my gosh.
And it's, I got it mainly for Charlie, my son.
Yeah.
Please share recipes that you enjoy.
Yeah. I'm not going to do a product endorsement, but ours is great. And you can do so many different things. And it turns out it was really for me, not for him.
Of course.
Anyway, thank you for listening to our episode today. If you visit stoopstorytelling.com, you can see and listen to all of our content from all the years and learn about upcoming events. We want to thank Maureen Harvey for cooking up our podcast for many years. She has the perfect recipe for greatness. I have so many of these. I can really keep
let's
going,
keep
but I won't.
No,
so we will see you next time with more stories from the Stoop.